Hey, Bubs. Welcome back to another episode of Talkin' Snicked, the best podcast there is at what it does, and what it does best is talk about Wolverine. I am your host, Ryan, and I'm pretty excited about the episode I have planned for today. I'm going over a three-part miniseries from 2009, written by Brian K. Vaughan of Why the Last Man fame, and artwork from Eduardo Risso, who is, for me at least, best known for his work on the series with Brian Azzarello called 100 Bullets. But before I jump into the comic book, I wanted to say a quick words about a fallen hero pretty recently. So, let's get to it.
Should I call you Logan, Weapon X?
No, Wolverine!
Wolverine. Wolverine. Wolverine.
Now, if you think back to comics from the 70s and 80s, it's hard not to find a creator who was known for pushing the medium in a new direction. There's no shortage of influential creators from this era. For me specifically, you have guys like Chris Claremont, you have artists like Dave Cockrum and John Byrne, you have other guys on the other side working for Batman in Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams. You had other guys like Jim Starlin and Jerry Conway. You had, towards the end of the decade, the Frank Millers coming in. You had Marv Wolfman and George Perez doing great work on their titles. But a name that you don't hear often enough is Len Wein. Len Wein is a man who grew up a comic book fan. He came into the industry as an artist, but it was quickly learned that his real talent was in writing and editing, and he began his career for DC Comics. Possibly one of his most notable early achievements of his career was the co-creation of Swamp Thing, along with artist Bernie Wrightson in the early 70s. And from there, he moved on to Marvel Comics, where he had, you know, writing jobs here and there. A couple of the notable ones there was a run on The Hulk with artist Herb Trimp, or Herb Trimpy. And it was in the pages of The Incredible Hulk where he co-created the character of Wolverine, a character who, if it weren't for him, we wouldn't even have this podcast. Something else that Len Wein did, though, when he was with Marvel, was he didn't just create the character of Wolverine in the pages of Hulk. He was half of the duo responsible for bringing the X-Men back to relevance. Most X-Men fans will tell you that the Silver Age stories of Stan Lee and Roy Thomas, as, you know, fun as they are, they're not that important to the mythos. There's some fun character moments, but it really wasn't the beginning of X-Men as we know it. That didn't come until the Chris Claremont run in the 70s and 80s that led into 1991. But we wouldn't have the Chris Claremont run if it weren't for Len Wein. Giant Size X-Men number one from 1975 is the comic that many consider to be the beginning point for X-Men. This is the comic book that gave us not only greats like Cyclops and Wolverine on the X-Men team, but it introduced fan favorite characters. Nightcrawler, you know, he's a character that's in my top three. Storm, who is one of the greatest comic book characters of all time, one of the greatest female characters in all of comics. We have Colossus. We have Thunderbird. These are all characters that were co-created by Len Wein, and Chris Claremont would not have been able to do the things that he did with those characters if it weren't for the contributions of Len Wein. Len Wein passed away recently at the age of 69, and I wanted to just take a few moments here on the podcast to memorialize him and give him a moment of silence so that we can always remember the indelible mark that he left on comics and our fandoms. So a big, big thank you and so much respect to Len Wein. Condolences to his loved ones. So that being said, let's move on to something exciting and something new and something that hopefully will put a smile on our faces here as we move on from this tragic time. So I had mentioned in the opening that I wanted to discuss the 3-issue miniseries Logan with all of you. Now, this is a series that doesn't really seem to climb its way into a lot of the best of Wolverine lists. You know, you have things like Wolverine Volume 1, which I discussed last episode. You'll have one-off comics from the X-Men, like Uncanny X-Men 205 or Uncanny X-Men 132, I think, or 134, where it's the Wolverine alone against members of the Hellfire Club. You also hear Old Man Logan. It's a story arc from the Wolverine solo ongoing series. And a few other stories that kind of make those lists and round out those lists. But Logan, this 3-issue miniseries, isn't really one that comes across a lot. And I actually think it's a really delightful story. It's quick. Like I said, it's 3 issues. It's written by Brian K. Vaughan, who is best known, at least at this point, for being the creator and writer of Why the Last Man, a great comic book series, and I believe he's also the driving force behind one of the current, best series that are out there, which is Saga. And I had also mentioned that artwork from Eduardo Risso, who really the only thing that I know him from is 100 Bullets that he did with writer Brian Azzarello for DC's Vertigo imprint, which was a very crime-driven, noir, kind of a dark story. So it was interesting to see that kind of art style come to a Wolverine book. Now, rounding out the creative crew here is Dean White on colors and VC's Joe Caramagna as the letterer. So this story takes place in the aftermath of the House of M miniseries, which was a universe-wide miniseries that was, well, it was an alternate universe, as, that's something that the X-Men do better than almost any other comic series out there. And the premise of this is that Charles Xavier never created the X-Men. He was never there to oppose Magneto in his quest for mutant supremacy. But without someone like Charles Xavier there to oppose him, Magneto quickly took over the world and was able to carve out a spot for mutants specifically. He became the elected sovereign of the mutant nation of Genosha. And he actually became a very important world leader. Pretty much once he got all that he wanted for the mutants, he left the rest of the world alone for the most part. In this series, Wolverine, or as he's known at this point, James Howlett, is the leader of S.H.I.E.L.D. He's the director of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is the Genosha version of, the 616 S.H.I.E.L.D. Now, this came out a few years after the Origin miniseries, where it was revealed that Logan's real name was, in fact, James Howlett. And in this timeline, Wolverine was never captured by the Weapon X program. He never had the memory implants and the loss of his real memories and everything. He was a man who was fully aware of who he was and knew everything about his past and his present. And the aftermath of this miniseries left 616 counterpart with all of his memories intact. There was a time in the late 2000s where a bulk of the Wolverine stories had him dealing with unfinished business from his past as he woke up from the events of M-Day with all of his memories. And this story is no different. This story takes place with him going back to Japan to deal with something that unfolds in the pages of this series. So like I said, the series starts off in issue one with Wolverine traveling back to Japan, and he's giving us some exposition here that there are a lot of unfinished business that are hanging over his head, and this is one of those things that he now has to take care of. He has to go out there and deal with something that is pretty unpleasant. So it starts off, you know, frozen wilderness, and you're thinking, okay, well, maybe this is going to be like the Wolverine Volume 1 where he's in the Canadian Rockies, but right away we see the silhouette of, you know, an ancestral Japanese, you know, palatial estate. I'm not quite sure what the proper terminology is. I don't think they're called castles, but I could be wrong. Maybe it's just a Japanese castle. And there's a set of footprints that are leading up here, and we see that Wolverine is coming here, and it's abandoned, and there's no signs of life. And, you know, one of the lines that we get early on is, "I've been a lot of things in a lot of places. A sickly kid named James Hallett, a killing machine called Weapon X, a hero goes by Wolverine. But this is where I became a man." So we learn that, you know, as far as he's concerned, this is where his coming of age occurred. You know, not in the wilderness of Canada, but far across the ocean in a little Japanese estate. And as soon as he crosses the threshold into the main area of this castle, he removes his trench coat and everything, puts his Wolverine costume on, pops his claws. We get the obligatory snicked, and he's hit immediately with a fireball in the back of the head that knocks him unconscious. And we see this burning man. We get this silhouette of the skeletal creature who's just engulfed in flames. And based on the fact that this is Japan, we can only assume that these are, you know, nuclear flames. So we can kind of assume here that Wolverine is going to fight some nuclear man. And then, of course, we're given a flashback where Ethan G. Warren, some random person, is demanding that Wolverine identify himself. And we learn through this interchange here that this man is a member of the American military. He is a POW along with Logan now, and they are in a Japanese prison camp. So they argue a little bit. Turns out that this guy lived through something impossible, as did Wolverine, and that is kind of the reason that they're locked up together. And it doesn't take them very long to hatch a scheme to break out of this prison. And we get a couple of pages here of some close-ups. One of the things that Eduardo Risso does, and I'm not a huge fan of his artwork in general, he uses a lot of very thin kind of black lines and everything. And it almost seems like a grown-up, twisted version of Calvin and Hobbes. Just with the way that these characters are drawn and everything. They're very stark poses and all that, kind of like I was mentioning that he has a background in like a noir style, and you definitely see that here. But as far as the line work and everything, it's not very deep. It's very stark, and a lot of people like it, but I don't particularly care for it. But he does manage to get a lot of these emotions across, which is very good for this particular scene. You know, we see a young Logan here, and we see this other guy with him is very worn. He's got abuse marks on his face, you know, bruises and boils and things like that. His eyes are almost always shrouded in darkness, kind of a sign that, you know, his eyes are a little sunken and maybe he's gone off the deep end, you know. That's definitely something that we see represented visually in characters who are supposedly crazy or insane, is, you know, the sunken eyes and the deep shadows around the eyes. So they're kind of tipping us off right away that this guy is no good. But that being said, the two of them still manage to escape from this Japanese prison camp. And we, you know, mostly due to Wolverine's ferocity here, there are three armed Japanese guards that come in with rifles, with bayonets and everything. And there's some stabbing of Wolverine. There's some stabbing of this other guy. And the two of them manage to fight their way. Very brutal fight. It's not elegant like the fighting that we saw last week in Wolverine Volume 1 from Frank Miller. It's definitely a lot more visceral and animalistic. And even though I don't particularly care for the style, it's very fitting for the story that's being told. And the ferocity here from Eduardo Risso's pencils really does come across. So big kudos to him on that, at least. And the coloring here, I really like the coloring in this. It's not very detailed. It's very like watercolory, but it's very pale. There's a lot of light pinks and light blues and light purples that are being used, and it kind of makes it come across as they're in this really dingy place. It's really dim lit, and it's not very pleasant. And I mean, you see that in war stories and other things like that from the era, you know, movies and things that take place in this era. You know, the World War II, 1940s are very blue and very pink and very pale. And we get that here from the coloring from Dean White. So the two of them at least are on par with each other. And it does make the story very visually appealing. But they manage to escape from putting on some stolen Japanese soldier outfits and just kind of walk right out of this prison. And we just get some silhouettes here. They're in the Japanese wilderness. They're very far away from society, and they come to a bridge, and someone cries out, and it's a woman. It's a woman by herself. She has a bowl of flowers. It looks like she was picking flowers, which is odd because, well, I guess we don't really necessarily know that this is winter, considering there's no snow on the ground here. We just know that it's winter in the present day. So perhaps it's spring, perhaps it's autumn. They haven't really given us that time frame. And we'll find out a little bit later exactly when this is, but at this point, we have to assume it's, you know, possibly summer or something like that with her flowers, and she's being out at night. And, you know, Logan's kind of shocked because he didn't hear her or smell her at first. And this guy that he's with doesn't really know what to do. He definitely cracked here because he wants to kill her, to which Logan says no. And tells the guy to walk away. He says, look, you're not going to do that. She's not the enemy. We're at war with Japanese soldiers, not Japanese civilians. So get out of here. And, you know, he begrudgingly leaves. He walks away. And the woman, you know, bows to Wolverine as a thank you for saving her life. And she brings him back to her home to take care of him, because obviously he's wounded. He's not healthy. I mean, his clothes are all in tatters. He doesn't look well fed or well kept for. Obviously, the guy that he was with is also, you know, beaten and bruised and all that. And as the two of them, Logan and this woman, return to her home, then the soldier here, Warren, watches them. So it's dusk now, and she's feeding Wolverine the food, and she introduces herself as Atsuko, and she shows Wolverine her familial sword and tells Wolverine that it belonged to her husband, and it belonged to her father, and her father had volunteered to fight in the war, and they had made him become a kamikaze pilot, and so her father is now dead, and the sword belongs to no one. So she offers it to Wolverine. And then she shows Wolverine that the only thing that she has left to remember her father by are fingernail clippings, so that she would have something left to bury. And, you know, she says, no, my father, this isn't my father. My father lives within me. And, you know, after having a few deep moments, they have a more human moment where she gives herself to Logan. And, you know, Logan, one at the very end of this issue, Logan says, this is heaven, isn't it? I'm already dead and now I'm in heaven. And the woman says, no, not heaven. And Wolverine says, well, then where is this? And she says, Hiroshima. And that's the end of the first issue. You know, we see the little hut that she lives in and the countryside upon which her house is nestled. And we see, you know, this glorious sunrise. There's yellows and oranges and reds. Again, the coloring here is very good. It's, you know, it's a watercolor. And it works. It works really well, especially for a story that takes place in the past. And that's it for the first issue. You know, not really a whole lot of action. Other than Wolverine getting knocked out, and then Wolverine and Private Warren or Sergeant Warren fighting out of this prison, but definitely a very human moment for someone like Logan. We see that he's not willing to kill an innocent person just to save himself. That he's willing to stand up to people who are, and that's something that's telling of Logan's character. I mean, this is something that we always see Logan struggle with, whether or not he's an animal or whether or not he's a man. And in this moment, at least, he was able to prove that he is a man. And then we even get to see another moment between him and Atsuko that is, you know, that is very human. It's very emotional and heartfelt, and it's a very warm moment. And even the issue itself ends with very warm colors. As I had mentioned earlier, it was, you know, blues and pinks and everything, and now we're getting to see reds and oranges and yellows, a lot more warmth and brightness to it. So great first issue. Again, it's very human. And that moves into the second issue, which again is not a huge issue as far as action, but more of, you know, a human story for Logan here. So again, we start off this issue in the present day. Logan has come to, he has his claws popped and drawn, and he's fighting this creature, this flaming skeletal being that doesn't talk. You know, it just, everything about it is feral, and it fights Wolverine, and Wolverine fights back, and eventually Wolverine is engulfed in the flames, and the creature he feints a punch and is able to get behind Logan, and he picks him up and he just throws him through the roof. And as Wolverine's flying through the air, he has another remembrance. He's remembering back to his time with Atsuko. And, you know, we get to see a more feral version of Wolverine here. You know, he's got his clothes off and he's covered in the body hair, you know, and all the while Atsuko is very feminine with a sheet wrapped around her and everything. You can tell that these are two people who are emotionally connected right now, and they're very comfortable with one another, and not just for, you know, animalistic reasons, but there's an emotional connection here. You know, we get to see Wolverine speaking Japanese, so we at least know that he learned Japanese, you know, during or before World War II, which is very cool. You know, that was always something that was a question in X-Men when he first met Mariko back in Uncanny X-Men 118, and he's speaking Japanese, and it never really gets explained when exactly it is that he learns it. But in this issue, we at least know that he knows Japanese, and he's able to speak it much better than at the beginning. You know, one of the things that he had mentioned to her was that his Japanese isn't very good, and now it is. So you have to assume that at least some time has passed. I mean, it could be the very next morning, but at this point, it definitely seems like there's a connection between him and Atsuko, and he's speaking Japanese pretty well here. So I'm assuming that a little bit of time has passed at least. And one morning they're having a discussion, and he's telling her that, you know, he wants to take her back to North America with him, either Canada or America. And they're kind of talking about, you know, his nickname, and he kind of mentions that, you know, he's very smelly, and that his fellow soldiers called him Badger or Ferret or Skunk, which I think is kind of funny that they would call him Badger, since, you know, a badger is very closely related to a Wolverine. And in the cartoon X-Men Evolution, Boom Boom in Season 2 actually calls him Badger all the time, and it drives him crazy. So it's just kind of funny to see that, you know, other writers are kind of keen on that idea as well, kind of ribbing Wolverine there and calling him Badger and everything. But they're having this very sweet moment, drinking tea, sharing tea together, when a gunshot rings out and the tea falls, and there's just this splatter of blood. And at first we don't know if it was Wolverine who was shot or if it was Atsuko who was shot, but the very next page luckily answers that question. They don't keep us in suspense very long. Wolverine has been shot right in the head, and now here is Warren, you know, Edgar Warren, the guy that escaped the prison from Wolverine, with Wolverine in the last issue, and who wanted to kill Atsuko upon meeting her, but was forced away by Logan, and he has now come back for revenge against Logan for, you know, sleeping with the enemy and betraying him. And as he's, you know, making threats and is preparing to kill Atsuko, she actually pulls out her father's sword and attacks. And it's great. We get a couple of pages here of them fighting together. She's using her sword. Clearly she's been trained on how to use those. And, you know, she injures him a few times. There's definitely a lot more ferocity to this fight than the fights with Logan and Warren escaping from the POW camp. But after a few pages of battle and some banter between the two, Warren proves that his bayonet is a better weapon than her katana, and he impales her on it. And, you know, she's trying to apologize to Wolverine. And as Warren is, you know, proudly standing over her dead body, Wolverine comes to, fully healed, and they start this fight. And this is where Warren reveals to Logan that, the two of them were, in fact, in prison together for a reason. Is that was because, you know, they can both heal. Warren says, "You're just like me." And Wolverine says, "You know, we have nothing in common." And this guy's trying to convince him, like, "No, we do. We're gods. We can heal from, you know, any wound and everything." And so Wolverine takes Atsuko's family sword and he impales Warren on it. And Warren just calmly takes the sword out and lets him heal. And he kind of gives Wolverine his quick, you know, little origin story, saying, you know, "I kind of noticed it when I was a kid and this, that, and the other thing." And they're talking, and it turns out that, you know, they're not going to see eye to eye here. And he kind of mentions, you know, it takes him a little bit longer to heal and he can't feel pain and all this. And, you know, it just kind of reminds, you know, of other characters that Wolverine fights eventually at some point, you know, in his own comic book series. But Warren kind of realizes here that Wolverine heals much quicker, but he can't feel pain. And so he starts rubbing in the fact that, you know, he just killed Wolverine's girlfriend. And so the two of them, they decide not to stand on ceremony, and Wolverine throws the sword away. And I mean, they're just going at each other here with punches, and it gets very brutal. And the battle is interrupted by a B-29. And this is the atomic bomb. You know, the atomic bomb has now been dropped on Hiroshima. And here Logan and Warren are on the beach in the middle of a fight, and they have to stop. And, you know, Logan kind of just remembers, you know, all he remembers is, and I like the way that Brian K. Vaughan puts this, but, you know, Wolverine, again, this is a Wolverine that doesn't know the extent of his healing powers. He says, "You know, see you soon, Atsuko." And then he says, "All I remember is a teardrop falling from the sky and then a splash." And we actually get a double page spread here from Eduardo Risso showing the, you know, mushroom cloud, and just a few panels of just destruction. You know, we see Warren pretty much liquefy. We see the flesh melting off of his bones. We see structures and swords and metallic objects just being melted away. And then we get another page, and it's remnants of the city. It's destruction. It's completely devastated and gone. And we see this skeletal Logan emerging. And I say skeletal because, I mean, part of his leg is melted away. You can see parts of his spine through his stomach. I mean, it's very grisly. There's blood dripping from him as he grows back his bones and his muscles and his body. We see the bone claws protruding from his hands, and that's how the issue ends. So the issue, a lot of action there at the end, and then, you know, the big explosion, but, you know, a few more character beats. You know, we see Wolverine being a good guy again here, standing up for this woman that he has a connection with, that he thought that, you know, he could fall in love with, just this woman that that he loved, and that's all taken away from him in an instant. It actually kind of reminds me a lot of, you know, the fight between Hamato Yoshi and Oroku Saki in, you know, the Ninja Turtles lore, where they just have this brutal battle over the, you know, corpse of a woman that they both loved. I mean, obviously, in this case, Warren didn't have, you know, loving feelings for this person, but he felt a kinship with Wolverine, whether he liked him or not. And, you know, it's something that Logan possibly could have returned as well had he not killed this woman. But it definitely reminds me of those kind of battles. And that's how the second issue ends, with that great splash page of Wolverine, you know, regenerating. And then we're taken into the third and final issue. So, I mean, you know, short series, it's a lot quicker read. You could probably read all three of these issues in the time it takes you to read the first two of the Wolverine series that we spoke about last issue or last episode between Chris Claremont and Frank Miller, but it's still really good. Again, just like the other two, the issue starts in the present day. Wolverine is laying in the snow where he landed, where this flaming dude threw him out, and we see through the trees and through the snow this flaming skeleton is now walking towards Wolverine. And, you know, Wolverine's remembering because of this nuclear fire that this guy has. You know, he's remembering his past, and he's realizing who this person is, and it becomes a personal fight. And Wolverine pretty much tells him, you know, I don't want to have to kill you. I say that we move on, you know, let yourself heal. And finally this creature speaks to him. And he says, you know, and that is why you'll lose this war. And then, of course, we get another flashback here to Logan in the past, you know, 1945 Japan here, and spending some more time with Atsuko. And we see that, yeah, it was probably more than one day here. They're sharing a moment. They're speaking with a familiarity. He's talking about plans for the future and everything. You know, again, he's mentioning that he wants to take her back. We get some really good human moments. There's some intimate moments here. There's, well, I mean, it wouldn't be a Wolverine book, I guess, if he wasn't nude, and if his love interest wasn't nude as well. So we get some of that, but of course, you know, we don't actually see anything. It's all, you know, all the body parts are always playfully hidden by shadows or arms or, you know, teapots and things like that. And from here, it kind of goes into possibly a memory that he's having of her. And, you know, she's in this field up to her waist in wheat. And, you know, she's there one moment, and then the next she explodes. And now he's remembering the fight with Warren. And he comes to yet again. And he's got this gaping hole in his chest, and he's bleeding. And this flaming creature is holding Wolverine's heart in his hand. And then he eats it. I mean, I'm not going to bury the lead here. This skeletal creature eats the heart. And somehow, by eating that, he is able to regenerate himself all the way back to the flesh. You know, he returns to the house where this little showdown originally started, and he puts on Wolverine's coat, and he's getting ready to leave when, you know, Wolverine appears. And this, you know, this nuclear man is thinking, oh, crap. And, he, you know, he lets loose with this flaming blast and melts, you know, half of Wolverine's face away and all that. But, you know, by now, Wolverine has his adamantium skeleton, not like he had, you know, not like he didn't have back in 1945. So Wolverine's actually a lot stronger now. And he's able to take the blast. And that actually really freaks out this guy who thought it was, you know, his most powerful thing. And there's a final showdown, and we get this just this really great goodbye where this dude is beaten, and he's laying on the ground, and Wolverine pops his claws and slashes at him, but we don't necessarily see it. We just see silhouettes, and I really like what Eduardo Risso does here, where we see the Wolverine slash at the top, but then the lower panels are all just silhouettes in a snowstorm. And Wolverine, you know, realizing that he's done, and that even though he's going to regrow his heart will never be whole. It'll never be the same. And, you know, he has beaten Warren. Warren is now dead, and that gives Wolverine the chance here to remember Atsuko one last time. And she's there under the cherry blossoms, you know, in her wonderful kimono, and Wolverine is there as well. And he tells her, I just want to be with you. And she says, you can't. You know, you can't be with me. You can never follow me where I am. But you can choose to remember me, or you can choose to let go. And it just fades to white. And Wolverine wakes up, you know, under the tree, and he looks out and he sees the sun rise. And that's the end of the story. I mean, it's really quick. I mean, I was able to get through 3 issues of story here in about half the time it took me to get through 4 issues of the other series that I talked about last week, which was Wolverine, the 4-issue Wolverine Volume 1 miniseries. But I like how emotional this story is, and I like the artwork, surprisingly. I know that at the beginning I said I wasn't really a big fan of Eduardo Risso's pencils, and I'm not usually. I don't particularly care for a lot of what I saw in 100 Bullets. But for this particular story, and partnered up with Dean White with these, you know, amazingly vibrant yet soft watercolors, is something special. And the story really resonates. You know, I did a poll recently on my Twitter account, which is @talkandsnicked. Little plug there. And I asked, you know, my followers and everything what the most interesting aspect of Wolverine's past was. And it always comes back to his time in Japan, his time as a Japanese samurai. And I think this is clearly the start of that. We got to see a little bit, you know, we got to peek behind the curtain here of samurai Wolverine and kind of see where it started. I mean, obviously in this issue he knows Japanese already, so you have to assume he's at least spent time here at some point prior to World War II, but not necessarily. He may have just been there for a long time and was able to pick up on the culture. But this is definitely the start of that. You know, you have to assume that he heals from this blast and he finds himself in Japan. You know, he'd been taken prisoner before. He doesn't have any markings of identification. You have to assume that this is the point in his life where he stays in Japan. He learns how to become a samurai, or at least how to chase the tranquility that one finds being a samurai. You know, that's always one of the things that he seems to struggle with the most, is can he control his animalistic side long enough to be a samurai, or will he always give in to those baser instincts and never be able to fully realize that tranquility and that inner peace that comes with the territory? So I like this story. It's, you know, it's among my favorite Wolverine stories. I don't think I'd put it in my top five of, you know, Wolverine stories either for importance or just for fun. But it's a great story. It's definitely worth reading. You know, I left a lot of the dialogue and those kind of things out. So you can really go back and read it for yourself and see, you know, what this story really means and where it fits in with Wolverine. But I think if you're a fan of Wolverine, especially any part of the time that Wolverine spends in Japan, that you'll really like this story. So I recommend that you all read it. If you do decide to read it, or if you've already read it, then reach out to me on Twitter. It's, you know, I already mentioned my handle, but it's at Talkin Snicked, and that's no G in Talkin and SNIKT. If you want to keep the conversation going on there, great. If you're a little bit more long-winded than, you know, a 140-character tweet, then send me an email. It's talksnicked@gmail.com. If you send me a tweet or an email, you know, I might be reading them on a show here in the future. You might get to hear yourself be read out here and hear your thoughts shared with others, you know, other Wolverine fans and everything. So go ahead and do that. And make sure that you follow me here on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or Google Play, or, you know, whatever other app it is that you're using that pulls those feeds. You can also check out my website, which is talkinsnicked.pinecast.co. You know, if you're ever on the web and you just want to stream from the website, that's all that the website is. It's just a host for the podcast, so there's not really a whole lot more on there. You know, I don't have a blog or anything like that, but definitely check it out. Subscribe, follow, like. I try to get an episode out now every single Wolverine Wednesday just for your listening pleasure. And I plan on covering a lot more, you know, Wolverine stories, not just in the comics, but TV, the cartoons, of course, you know, movies. I definitely would love to talk more about various Wolverine toys that I've collected throughout the years, or Wolverine trading cards. I mean, there's so much that we can cover on a Wolverine-centered podcast. So, yeah, I've had a great time chatting with all of you, and I hope that you've done the same. So, until next time, bubs.